Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Sarah Smith. If you're the type of person that goes to Liberty as other people would go on safari, and the fact that John Lewis doesn't have a funeral service makes you fret, Sarah Smith cleaning cloths are for you. Sarah Smith, available from Sainsbury's, for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Mary, not Contrary, here. I heard you were desperate for more Dumpty Dums, so here it is from me. Dumpty 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 dum, dumpty dumpty dum dum, dumpty 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 dum, dumpty da da di dum, dumpty di 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 dum, di 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 dum, di 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 dum, dumpty 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 da 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 dum, di da di dum.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that's centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the much-loved, dearly departed Moggy that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the hateful attack dog that is
Harriet Carmichael, a.k.a. Shambridges.
And with us in the house, we are joined by
Christine Michael from the Ambridge Observer.
Woohoo! And the last part of our doggy requiem is you. Now, today's Dumpty Dum is another classic from the vault, so please, if you want some fresh Dumpty Dums, Harriet is going to tell you what to do.
Yes, if you'd like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or give us a plot prediction, then ring us on 0203 031 3105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to lovely Lucy for going away so I can once again co-host this amazing show, which is without question the highlight of my career so far. And trust me, I've worked with the greats. And also thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and to Sarah Smith for sponsoring us.
On this week's episode, we have calls from Steve, who predicts that Pip and Toby are the new Romeo and Juliet, Jojo's Sexy Heels, who's reading the runes through the music, and Witherspoon, who's dancing like he's in Rio and he's hating on Susan. But first, before the caller in arrives, let's go and meet the editor-in-chief of the Ambridge Observer. Christine! Yeah. How are
Hello.
You?
Hello. Hi, I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Now, you've been... How long has the Ambridge Observer been up and running? And how does it fare in the circulation wars with the Borchester Echo?
Oh, well, I think we're trouncing the Borchester Echo.
Really?
I think, yes, no question about that. Our circulation manager is... Well, whether he's telling me lies or not, but he always seems very optimistic.
But
we started the very end of 2014, beginning of 2015.
Mm-hmm. But that's a brave time to go into print when everything's moving online, isn't it?
It is, yes, but we've got a good distribution network. You know, what with being in, now that we're back in the Bridge Farm shop, now that Rob isn't there, we were in the flood bar, you know, we get around. So, and we're free, of course, so, you know, people can pick us up whenever they want.
Ah, okay. Now, jokes aside, why did you decide to do this great blog?
I think it started with Twitter. I've been tweeting about the Archers for about 3 or 4 years, I think. And I was doing so much tweeting that I thought, well, if I added up all these tweets every week, it might as well be a blog. Mm-hmm. So one weekend between Christmas and New Year, I just sort of sat down and wrote the first one. But when it started, it wasn't really a newspaper format. It was more of a review. But since then, it's sort of found its own form more. And it's much more like a newspaper now.
So you reckon you're a frustrated newspaper editor? You're a bit of a Kelvin McKenzie of Borsetshire.
Well, I am a newspaper editor or a magazine editor.
Oh.
By trade.
So you're not frustrated then?
No, not frustrated in any way.
My wrist has been duly slapped. I'm sorry.
I assumed you must be a real journalist because, I mean, it's such an authentic paper, isn't it?
Yes. My first job actually was on a farming newspaper as well, a weekly farming newspaper. For which I was totally unprepared. But I didn't listen to The Archers then. It was only quite a few years later when I met the chap who is now my husband, and he listened to The Archers, and so did his family, so that sort of got me into it. But, of course, I felt at home because I sort of knew some of the farming parlance, so hogs and hoggets and silage and that kind of thing came fairly naturally to me, really.
Mm.
You could step in for the agricultural editor, should he ever go on holiday.
I wouldn't dream of it. That would be way beyond my skill set. Because they've got things like drones and automatic babies
right.
and all sorts of
no.
things now. Which, you know, I was never up to that sort of thing.
So, you'd catch up, I'm sure.
So you said that it was your hubby that got you into Ambridge.
Yeah.
So what year was that? What vintage are you?
That was about, oh, now there's a question. It was early 90s, so I think the first big storyline I remember really was Elizabeth with Cameron Fraser, when he treated her so cruelly and abandoned her at a motorway service station, if you remember.
Yes.
And motorway service, well, maybe you don't because you're too young to remember that, but motorway service stations do not bode well in The Archers, do they? As we found with poor Heather. if you hear a motorway service station, it's generally not a good thing.
That would make
and I
a
think
good
that's where it started.
Well, they should have a spin-off just set at that the nearest motorway service station to Ambridge and the goings
yes.
on.
Yeah. Well, actually, and also Pip and Rex had that unfortunate meeting with Alice, didn't they, at the motorway service station where it was
yes.
clear
oh,
that
yes.
you know it wasn't going to work. So, you know, it's just the curse of the motorway service station, really.
And is there another curse? Because didn't Ruth, when she was going to go off and do the deed with Sam, the cowman, there was something
yeah.
about that it was a call while she was driving from the motorway service station going to Oxford, and it was David saying that he was home with the kids, and then she turned round.
Yeah, but didn't she get to the hotel? Or maybe that was the...
Mm.
Sure, she got
I think
to
she did get that far, but I think you're right about motorways. Motorways, yes, I think there's a thesis to be written here.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
We have to do a special supplement in The Observer on motorways.
So you being all kind of journalistic... and coming in from the early 90s, so and that you've got a decent vintage on you now. How can you categorise that? I mean, in terms of Archer's listenership, you know, that's what I'm referring to. I'm not being ungallant. How would you say that the Archers has changed kind of thematically, dramatically in that time?
It's interesting. I think. I mean, you could say the obvious things, like it's perhaps become more issues-led, and mm-hmm. people do talk about that. I mean, I was just thinking about the story of Elizabeth and Cameron Fraser, and if they were doing that story now, I think it would be done totally differently. I don't remember there being any helplines, for instance, when Elizabeth was in that
yes.
you know, terrible state. And so I think maybe that the way of handling stories has changed. But I think what sort of stands out for me is the way it doesn't change, that you know you have the seasons and you have the year punctuated by these fairly ridiculous events and you have the love affairs and you have children growing up and so I think it's that sense of continuity really that people love about it and that kind of overcomes the way the series the stories have developed or the actors change or whatever.
I agree with that. The consistency kind of, that's what we all love, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
You just carry on and you can get over these massive storylines because things are still gently rumbling on underneath.
Yes, and I think the comedy has always been there. I mean, that's obviously what we're all about in a way. And I think I've always thought of The Archers as a comedy in the same way you were talking last week about William Smethurst and how he was talking about it as a social comedy. And the comedy has always been there. And so what I'm trying to do with The Observer, and I guess what, you know, we're all trying to do is bring that comedy out more. It's already there, but there's just so much scope for having more fun with it. And of course, that can make it tricky when there are very serious storylines going on. But generally, I think of the Archers as sort of a life-enhancing thing, really.
I've always seen it as an action thriller myself.
Have you? Well, that's...
Especially all the flood stuff last year. Crumbs.
Well, yeah, it definitely has its noir side, doesn't it? I mean, certainly it does.
What's nice about the Ambridge Observer is that even that the flood stuff, it makes it more real because massive things do happen and they are a big drama in people's lives, aren't they? But actually, when they're reported about, it makes it sound much more realistic as well, because things, it's like the village I grew up in and my parents are still there. They have the kind of newsletter every month, I suppose. And you think, oh, something, you know, really big has happened, like, you know, a house caught fire, or, and that's, you know, a huge drama for somebody. But then when it's reported about, it's kind of seems okay. It's a lot, you know, the, I don't know, there's something reassuring about...
What,
you know,
reassuring like, about someone's house burning down?
No, it's a terrible tragedy. But I mean, the after, you know, the afterwards and the kind of, the fact that it's reported about and you just, that's life goes on, doesn't it?
Yes, and I think also with the sort of local newspapers, it is a format, so it feels kind of quite structured. And
yeah,
it
maybe
makes it
that's
a bit more
it.
Safe in a way.
Yeah, maybe that's why it's reassuring. Yeah, because it's something that you know and that's familiar, and yeah, the way it's reported. Yeah,
but it's not. Obviously, I aim not to be a very competent newspaper, really. it's a bit hapless.
Though,
so you won't expect the highest standards of reporting. But I do try and give people, if you've missed it for a week, you know, I do try and give people a sort of a general summary of what's gone on.
That's the thing. It's much, much more interesting than the catch up. Isn't it, on the kind of synopsis? It brings it to life a bit more.
So,
well, that's good too. It's great fun to do, I have to say. It's a joy to do.
On your team of journalists, do you have any proper muckrakers, Christine?
On my team of journalists, which is me. we are a lot of different hats. You know, one day we'll be doorstepping somebody, and the next day we'll be hanging back in the background at Harrison Burns's press conference, and the next day we might just be sitting at the bar in the ball, you know, catching up on the gossip. But we do have contributors of Lavinia Catwater is probably my favourite contributor. I had to invent Lavinia as a way of sort of writing about the things that you just couldn't get in the local paper. They just wouldn't be reported. So I lie back on my chaise longue with my gin and sort of think myself into Lavinia Catwater and her romantic sagas.
Wowza. We'll have to get her on next week. She sounds awesome.
Now I might write her into a Shambridge.
An amazing name, Lavinia Catwater. I'm in love with her already.
She's a side character, isn't she?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, so you've been with All Things Archers since the early 90s, as you said. So who has been your most favourite character?
Oh, my most favourite, I think, still Jill Archer, I think. I'm very fond of Jill.
I love
she's always been
Jill.
There. And I love her lemon drizzle and her Hello You Twos. And I'd love to sit at her kitchen table. I'm very fond of Debbie Aldridge because she's so practical and a bit tormented, but she'd just sort you out properly, wouldn't she, Debbie? Oh, and I love the way that she was so supportive of Kate and that, you know, that's that side to her. So I think there's a couple of my favourites.
You know, about Jill, just quickly, one thing I've never quite understood is her and Phil were such an amazing team. They completely got each other. But for me, the passing of Phil didn't seem to impact on her as much as I thought it would have. She seemed to just take that very much in a stride. What do you reckon?
Well, she very much took up a lip, isn't she, and sort of getting on with things. And I imagine that she does go and sort of commune with him quietly in the churchyard. And I think that was one reason why she would never have moved north, because she wouldn't have wanted to leave where Phil is.
You do hear her in her quiet, private moments missing him, don't you?
I think
lots of people don't fall apart from on the outside, do they?
No, I wouldn't expect her to fall apart, but I thought that there could have been a nice set of storylines just about her really adjusting to life without Phil. And there was a little, so she moved to Brookfield, etc. I was going to say Brookside for a second.
Oh, that's brilliant!
You know, but considering that Phil had been in it from episode one, I think a fitting kind of epitaph would have been to remember much more of the kind of the history of Phil Archer. But maybe it's just me, because when I came in, they very much were the alpha farming team, and I always loved me some Phil, basically.
Mm. Well, he did return briefly, didn't he, when David was agonising over the move.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and ghostly Phil.
And I think Phil's absence kind of makes Jill more sympathetic to characters like Bert. When, you know, when Bert lost Frieda, she's able to sort of say, yes, I do understand. And you think, yes, you know, she really does understand. Mm. And I felt for her. I think she really struggled when she had to move to Lower Loxley with her writing desk.
Yes.
And in the Ambridge Observer, we had Lizzie letting out her room to a photocopier salesman from Redditch because the conference was overbooked. And I just thought, you know, she was not in her milieu there, was she, with, you know, not being able to have her own kitchen around her and all of that. So I was glad when she moved back to Brookfield, even though it was at poor Heather's expense. Mm. Heather got the worst part of the deal there, didn't she, really?
Absolutely. And I suppose, just to end up on old Jill and Phil, the fact that she's so anti the Fairbrothers is to do with Grace, which is really to do with Phil in a long-winded roundabout way.
Exactly. And I hope that's why the Fairbrothers stay around, because I think we may see more of that playing out, especially as she's already seen what Toby and Pip are up to.
Mm.
And I think there will be, you know, a harsh word said about that before too long, which will all make for some drama and some fun.
So which character since you've been listening have you kind of struggled to get your head around?
Oh goodness. Will Grundy, you know, he is moody and mean and not magnificent. And although I miss him in a funny way, because he just sort of hangs around being difficult. Although Nick, I think, has been the making of him, and I miss Nick as well, because I imagine she's stuck in children's church somewhere. She seemed to go off there a few months ago and never reappear.
Yeah,
yes.
They did kind of carry on that. Yeah, that was going somewhere, that story, a little bit, wasn't it? Her joining the Stubbs and all that, and now they've just completely neglected her.
Yes, and we don't hear from her at all, just a shame. And I think Kate is really difficult. I mean, from a humour point of view, she just keeps on giving. But I think she's a fairly despicable character in terms of, you know, leaving her children and making life difficult for Phoebe and the sponging and all of that. And so I have great fun with her, but I wouldn't like to have her on my team in any way, really.
I think Kate's an interesting character because she's the one obvious female character who's written unsympathetically. You know, there's no two ways about it, but still very believably. So you believe her as a human being, and I think I've said before on a Dumpty Dum that, you know, I had a girlfriend that fundamentally was a Kate once, so I recognise many of the kind of character traits. But but in terms of making somebody who is basically an antagonist, but who you still believe, you know, she's a great character, but yes, and not a great human being.
No, but she's still she's likable though. She's lovable because she's.
I don't know. I really don't know, because she's so self-absorbed, and the fact that she has left her children and doesn't seem to recognize, to be fair to her, she has recognized it, because she did say to Roy, you did bring up Phoebe, etc. And every now and then Phoebe does remind her that she has two children in South Africa. But I don't know if I like her though. I like her as a character. I don't like her as a person. It's two different things.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want her to be my mum or my sister, particularly, but I still think...
You'd be off to Oxford if she was.
But yeah, she's certainly a compelling character.
Yeah, she's absolutely
compelling. I was very worried when I thought for a moment that she and Roy might get back together when they had the launch at the spa,
well,
but thank goodness they didn't.
I still think that might run that one.
Yeah.
Don't you want Roy and Haley to get back together?
I do, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, it's almost the end of the summer. You know, those long autumn nights are about to start drawing in. Just before Haley comes back to Ambridge, you know, it's a little bit of a kiss and a cuddle wouldn't hurt anybody. And it would, you know, it would make us all kind of, you know, recoil with horror. But it'd be a great bit of drama.
Yeah.
But I do want him and Haley to get back together. Yes, I do.
I can see you're picturing it already, though.
I remember way back in the 90s when they went off to Glastonbury and her and Roy got together. I never believed it back then. I didn't. But I didn't put too much critical kind of thought into it. I just thought, I don't believe... Because she was just too much of a racy character. And even back then, he was just too dull. Mm. So the very fact that they got together back then was never believable for me. But I think they've managed over the intervening, 18 years or whatever the heck it is, however old Phoebe's supposed to be, to plausibly put together this kind of blended family storyline whereby the two completely different characters and how they've managed, and it's been Roy and Haley, admittedly, but how they've managed to bring up Phoebe. And I think that's it's been brilliant and very believable. But there obviously is something, whatever that something is, between the pair of them. And I think we saw it about a month ago or so when she was getting her press launch ready and Roy stepped into the breach and she did appreciate Roy's help. And we kind of know where this was all kind of heading. It didn't get there, but it was definitely going in that direction.
Yeah, no, that's right. But I know, and maybe there is something about Roy, though, because I never believed him and Lizzie either. I almost stopped listening at that point.
No. Mm. But that's the thing. I can believe Roy being fond of
Maybe Kate. Roy's got some kind of asset that is just lost on radio. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he has.
Him and Lizzie was just not believable, was it? Just, yeah, I didn't like that.
No, I rather hope that she'd get together with that nice Ifty who was teaching the boys cricket. He seemed nice. I mean, as a way of, you know, getting back into the relationship thing. Not a role in the tent with Roy. That just didn't appeal to me at all on any level.
But it was a good story. That's the thing.
Oh, it was great.
It is brilliant when they shock us.
Yes,
they surprise us. And something that's really because actually that's the thing, you know, when you're in a tent in a field and it's dark, well, you know, it could be anyone, couldn't it?
I'll have to get Lavinia Catwater onto this, I think. You know, trials in my tent or something, I don't know. But
I feel you've got an anecdote or two to launch into in with that there, Harriet.
No, that's all I'm saying. We've all been there several times.
One of the things that I love about Ambridge Observer is that you do look at all of village life, don't you? So, you know, even the cricket team and Harrismont Burns,
yes.
You know, it's all followed on the Ambridge Observer. So do you think he's the right man to turn the cricket team around?
Probably, yes. I think he's quite diligent. I think he's obviously trying a bit too hard at the moment with this Art of War stuff.
Isn't he just?
I think just a bit. And I think a couple of them might sort of rebel against that.
Mm.
And I can't believe that Rob made such a difference last season that, you know, he was the one player that got them to the top of the league. So I've got hopes for Harrison, I think. Yeah, what do you think?
My problem is with him, you're completely right. Number one, he's trying too hard. And also, you can't be bollocking. If you can only turn out 9 players the week beforehand and then people are coming up to practice and they're coming 5 minutes late, it's not wise to be absolutely jumping on their backs and giving them a right rollicking. So he really does need to sort out his kind of captaining style, which seems to be somewhat schizophrenic with actually how he is as a person. However, I think, I can't remember who exactly said it last week, it's a caller in era, that actually said they can foresee that Harrison and Fallon are going to become the linchpin of the village. So you have Harrison, cricket team, then Fallon is going to start doing events. And I think that in and of itself would be kind of would be nice, that we are seeing this kind of passing of the generational baton, so to speak. So, but for me, he's just a little bit too vanilla. He's too vanilla. And there is something, you know, he's just that sheet of blank A4 paper.
Yeah.
And he needs something else thrown at him as a character for me to absolutely believe in
him. He's been too worthy policeman-like as well, hasn't he? He's kind of like, he's the good guy. But actually, I'm not sure if that really fits with his kind of, you know, his character. Maybe if he wasn't a policeman, that he could have shown a bit more rebellion, or, you know, a bit more of his personality.
No, because I tell you, DC Dave Barry back in the 80s, which I know is before everybody's time here, other than mine, he was a proper bastard. So you had a policeman in the village who was just not nice.
You were allowed to be a bastard if you were a policeman back in the 80s. You can't.
That is true. I'm supposing that you, Christine, you know, give harassment bungs to get stories and stuff.
Absolutely. Well, his press conferences are legendary. I mean, you know, there they are. But he's so useless. He is a useless policeman. I mean, the crime rate in Ambridge is appalling. And, you know, the unsolved list is as long as your arm. I mean,
exactly. We've had where's arson, the bunting?
We've had rustling, we've had the bunting, we've had burglaries. And, you know, no, and graffiti and vandalism, and no one has ever been brought to book. And no one even.
Fallon,
you know,
no,
not
that's
even
not
clear.
Quite true. He Fallon's dad. He did arrest Fallon's dad. Give him that.
He did.
Where is he even based? Is he based at, like, Borsetshire Police Station? I mean, you know, like in the olden days, or about 30 years ago, there used to be towns and villages had a police station, didn't they? Or a house, at least. But where is he? Kind of, you know,
said when he came in, it was said, and I can't remember, it's Felpershire, it must be Borsetshire, and he you know, he's the kind of patrolling policeman or something or another, but it actually was said at the very start, but I can't remember. Cosmo, please, can you just fill us in?
I kind of just assume he's like the policeman of Ambridge and has a motorbike and just rides around, you know,
I think in real life, I mean, like our local safer neighbourhood team look after 47 villages.
Good heavens.
So he's going to be quite busy if he's got a very big area like
so
that.
But then he must be exhausted when it comes to cricket practice.
He must, yes. But at least Alan is there now to do the washing and make the tea.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I said this last week, but I just find the whole cricket thing with this making the teas deeply uncomfortable. But Christine, I take it that you actually live in the countryside. You're one of these weird and wonderful people of which, you know, Ambridge is the real backdrop of your life. So is this what goes on?
Well, I think it is. Yes, as far as cricket's concerned. I mean, I think it's a really good point about the Archers generally. I would love to see a man make his own sandwich. Apart from Ian, who does it for a living, obviously. But
that's a very good point.
They are just useless. And, you know, women and people bring them flasks of coffee and sandwiches and cakes all the time. And they never even, you know, Brian is at a complete loss, isn't he? If Jennifer leaves the kitchen for 10 minutes, he doesn't know where to find anything to eat. It is ridiculous, really.
It is a bit unbalanced. But then that must be... Presumably that is a typical village.
I just think it's just typical men. We're just hopeless, really.
I've also got a thing about proper coffee. I would love Jennifer and Jill to drink instant coffee for once, or just stick a tea bag in a mug instead of always having, you know, a fresh pot ready. Or
listen,
you know, the perfect
they love a cappuccino when they go to help. And actually, you just think, oh, I bet it's a really disgusting one.
I bet it's those gritty ones.
Yeah. Really weak and milky. But they love it. They love a cappuccino in Felpersham.
It's a treat, isn't it? It's a nice treat.
We have managed to just about stay clear of the storyline of the decade.
That's so old now.
Where do you stand on this, Christine?
I think the programme is called The Archers. So I think that's my only ever prediction about The Archers, is that it's called The Archers. And so if your name is Archer or has been Archer, you're likely to come out of things okay in the end. So I've got my fingers crossed for Helen, but things are looking a bit bleak at the moment, given as she won't say anything. And Anna seems about as investigative as one of my junior reporters.
Oh, it's so funny, isn't it? She's such an amateur, or seems to be. I mean, you just go, oh my God, just wouldn't you just do the obvious and go and talk to people? Why try and get everything out of Helen?
Yeah,
doesn't she do her own work?
I know Twitter gets very irate about this as well, and I think there are people who have legal experience say that it's, you know, it wouldn't actually happen like that, and I suppose they have to kind of condense things and gloss over things for the sake of the drama. But it is getting to the point where you just think, oh, you know, thank goodness Jess turned up this week anyway. So perhaps there is hope, but it's just so frustrating. And meanwhile, Rob seems to just be playing everything to his own advantage, doesn't he?
I really liked the Rob and Emma scene, actually. I thought that was really clever. Mm. You know, when she went over there to kind of go, oh, well, these are my terms and I'm not sure about it. And then he completely turned it around, didn't he? And said, and you know, and so already she's kind of under his spell. I thought it was really good. I thought they played it really well.
Mm. Yes, they did. And of course, but then Emma at least had doubts, and Susan said, well, you know, if you're going to betray your best friend, at least get some good money for it. Which is just so Susan, isn't it? I love that about Susan. So who knows? But we haven't got long to wait for the trial now, have we? Just a few more weeks to go.
No, true. True. Now, I reckon that, Christine, that we should just about start to wrap things up.
Okay.
But before we do, I think you should tell the good listeners of Dum De Dum where they can find the Ambridge Observer and all the other wonderful things on social media that you do.
Oh, well, you can find the Ambridge Observer at ambridgeobserver.blogspot.co.uk, I think. And I'm on Twitter as at CE Michael or the Ambridge Observer, and there's a Facebook page of the Ambridge Observer as well, but I'm kind of hard to miss, really, because I'm on Twitter quite a lot, and
if you just
Facebook
Google Ambridge Observer, your website comes straight up.
It should do. It's been fantastic how people have really liked it and responded to it, and the archers themselves have been great in supporting it and stuff. So I mean, not in any, you know, official way, but they support it on their social media, which is just lovely. So so yes, it has, it is, you know, up there, you can find it quite easily. But isn't it quite fun just to be part of this tribe?
It is,
of people who just love the archers, and you know, we can kind of be creative about it and find these kindred spirits in all different formats. I think it's just brilliant.
The thing, I wonder if there's any, you know, there's a Coronation Street Observer.blogspot. I don't think so. You can't do it with anything else.
I don't know. And I think it's radio that gives you the space, actually, to fill these creative gaps, really. Because, I mean, there's no point doing Coronation Street in Lego, really, is there? Because you can see it every week. Whereas, what would the Archers be without the Plarchers? How did we manage without the Plarchers, you know?
That is very true. Very true. Christine Michael, can we have you back on again?
Oh, I'd be absolutely delighted, yes.
Good,
it's been great fun. Thank you so much.
Well, I think definitely, after the end of the trial, we're going to have a big Ambridge Observer scoop where you can give us the proper lowdown on everything.
What is your headline going to be? That's the thing. It's going to be brilliant,
I have to write six different ones and go with whichever one is the actual verdict. Who knows at this point? It's all to play for.
We'll be catching up with you again soon then, Christine. You take care.
Thank you very much. You too. Lovely to talk to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
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 I loved her.
Oh, she was brilliant. Yes. You should definitely get her on soon.
Mm.
You know what?
She's an expert. Yeah, she would have been better to have on than you.
Well, I know. I always said, didn't I? I've been saying for months
and months. To be fair, you did say that you weren't going to be very good.
have you noticed how quiet I'm being? Because I listened to last week's and I thought, oh my God, just shut up. I'm so annoying. I just kept interrupting you. Are you still there?
Yeah. I just thought I'd let you talk. No, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun
I'm being really good at listening.
You didn't display much of that last week, but it was very entertaining. But you know what? I earned my money editing last week's show.
Yeah, I know. As I said on Twitter, I said it is all in the edit. I thought it was a very good edit.
No, I thought
it would have been about 3 hours long, wouldn't it?
But listen, it's not just in the edit. You're actually quite funny. you know who else kind of has funny comedic turns and insights?
Who?
Caller Inneris.
Oh, hang on. Shall I find the script again now? Hang on.
You know, when I say stuff like that, you can have those thoughts in your head, Harriet.
All right. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Smashing.
Caller Inneris.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
First up, we have Steve.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. Steve here. 3 plot predictions. First one, Pip and Toby. I think that they're going to fall hopelessly in love with each other. Mainly because the relationship is totally based on truth. They know everything about each other. They know all the history, all the past. And also, they have got no hang-ups. But what's interesting is that Toby's like a lifeboat. He's on call 24/7. Pip rings up and bang. Sorry, that's a bit sort of dodgy, really, isn't it? But bang, Toby's there. And there's no chance of him actually going astray because he's at Pip's beck and call all the time. And to push the lifeboat analogy a bit further, he's always ready to dip into the waters at 24/7. So, yeah, they're going to fall in love, hopelessly in love. And it's going to piss Rex off. Going to be lots of shenanigans about the business, and it's going to get very messy, but that's warming up to be a really good story. This is all predicated on what Goddess Steve has been putting on the forums about having a lesbian character. I think Phoebe is going to be the lesbian character, because she was distraught at the way her mum and dad behaved. And she's probably thinking, men are not worth it, because she had that total twonk of a boyfriend. And she's going to think, it's not worth it. I'm going to go off solids and start dating women. There you go. Bye-bye, bye-bye, mwah, bye-bye, love you, bye-bye, 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 mwah.
Steve, bye-bye. Now, Steve predicts...
Bye-bye.
Pip and Toby are the new Romeo and Juliet because their relationship is built on trust. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I totally agree. They're definitely going to fall in love and you know, Toby's going to be completely taken aback. Well, he's already in love with her, I think.
Well, and, you know, I think, Steve, you must be Nostradamus, because I think this is going to come to pass. Yeah. And what did it for me was... him saying to her, do you want to go away for a weekend?
Yeah.
Now, he's not just having a little bit of a roll around in the hay if he's saying stuff like that, is he?
No, he wants to spend time with her.
Mm. And again, Steve, you did say that, you know, she is in the driving seat. She's saying when they can meet and when they can't. And, you know, and yes.
Well, it's because suddenly he's doing the chasing, which he's never done before. So, you know, he's going to, you know, you fall in love with what you can't have, don't you? Or, you know, you want it more.
Was that the story of Ian Rufus?
The other way around, though.
Really? Did you meet him in a tent? A darkened tent?
Actually, it wasn't a tent. It wasn't, no.
Was it dark in there?
It was a party. It was a really good party. But I think, I think they're going to, definitely fall in love. And then I thought, actually, from having thought about what Steve said, I thought maybe then Rex will go away. Because they don't really need the two brothers anymore, do they? They've kind of done that opposite story, you know. I mean, kind of Rex is just going to be a boring spare part. Because they can't do the, Will and Ed rivalry thing, because they've done it.
Mm.
So I think Rex might just go away. And then it'll be Pip and Toby, and that'll be, there'll be another power couple.
Mm. I've no idea what's going to happen to the other fair brother sibling. But what I do think is that I'm going to say 10 out of 10 to the script writers for throwing us a bit of a googly, to have a cricketing analogy, for us to think, well, it's obviously going to be Pip and Rex, who are going to walk off into the sunset. But it's actually looking like it's going to be Pip and Toby.
Yeah, definitely. No, and I think they might end up being a serious couple. And, and then maybe Toby will change or calm down a bit at least.
Well, maybe part of,
we'll find out what that Brighton thing is, won't we?
Yeah.
Because I always thought he had another family, but then that was dismissed, wasn't it, ages ago? That he had like a child there.
Lucy and I did have a chat about this. But the very fact that Rex would say, do you need to go to Brighton again, says to me it can't be a child, because then he would understand the reason why he'd be going to Brighton. So it can't be that. But it's some nefarious something to do with money or something or another. But I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe him and Alistair are like doing something together in Brighton.
Mm. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yes. And everything will be tied up.
Now.
Joe. Because look, I wrote proper notes.
Okay,
this week.
Go on.
So look, not only did Steve talk about that, Henry cricket injury, totally agree. Phoebe lesbian, I don't agree, actually. I don't think so. I think she's been in love and, I don't know. But anyway, interesting.
Right.
That's my notes.
Okay.
It just says smashing. Henry cricket, Phoebe lesbian.
Jojo sex heels now, please.
Yeah.
All right. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Hi there, Dumpty Dummers. It's Jojo Sexy Heels here. And once again, it's the background music that has prompted me to call in. I've got two plot predictions. The first one really is, it's the hints of things to come that you get in the background music. And this week we had a conversation between Susan and Emma regarding Titchy Knob's request that Emma be a babysitter for little Henry. Whilst the two women were debating the pros and cons of putting Henry first so that he could play with his friends, rather than whether Pat and Tony might feel betrayed by Susan and Emma's decision to support Titchy Knob, in the background was the Andrews sisters singing Don't Fence Me In. And once again, once reviewing the lyrics, a couple of the lines jumped out at me, and I can really see some more parallels to the Archers. And in particular, the incident where Shula observed Titchy Knob beating up the hunt saboteur. Oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Well, that's reminding me that Titchy Knob actually has no property of his own. You know, he's married a farmer's daughter to get his foothold into the door. And to be honest, is Toby Fairbrother any different? Looks like he's chasing after Pip because he's got no money of his own. Another line was, standing by the sheriff's side, and when the sheriff said, I'm sending you to jail, the wildcat raised his head and cried. I actually believe that Shula's conscience will win, and the ABH, GBH with the hunt saboteur will finally be known by all, and no longer will he be the village hero, but he'll be seen as the selfish bully that he really is. Another line was, there will be no more let me ride through the wide open country that I love. He will indeed be fenced in. I fervently hope that the final line is very true. Send me off forever, but I ask you, please, don't fence me in. Let's hope it is going to be the end of Titchy Knob. Okay, speak to you all soon. Hope that gets the juices rolling for everybody. Bye now.
One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Now, Jojo.
Oh, sorry.
Now, Jojo is very smart. She always reads the runes on what's going to happen through the music which is played in the background.
Yes, I love that.
Now, do you think...
Spotify. Mm. I was just going to have a little listen to it on Spotify.
Right now?
Yeah.
In the middle of the show?
Yeah.
You're absolutely uncontrollable.
I didn't have time to do it earlier.
Well...
Oh, that's Frank Sinatra. Anyway, I just couldn't remember. I love the Andrew Sisters, but I couldn't remember the tune. I was just thinking of Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree. Anyway,
you're wildly out of control, Harriet.
Can I just... Okay, no, go on. You chat while I find it.
Right. I'm just stunned. Should Emma have said yes to babysitting Henry?
Well, I mean, to be fair to Emma, I know it's like a betrayal and everyone's saying no, no, no. And the Archers did a poll, didn't they? And everyone said, no, she shouldn't. She should have said no.
Mm.
But she does need the money. She needs the extra money. And also, if I was Pat, I would be really pleased. And if I was Helen, I'd be really pleased. Because you'd think that then you would kind of, you could... Emma could influence Henry and talk about his mum and but the trouble is, of course, Emma's going to be completely manipulated now, isn't she?
I suppose you're completely right. She needs the money, etc. But a better way of going about it would have been to march round to Pat and say, Pat,
yeah,
Rob has asked me to babysit, etc. How do you feel about it? And then also, you know, try and send some kind of smoke signal to Helen in the clink, you know, write a letter or whatever the heck, you know, because, yes, you can construct a very valid argument that says this is good for Henry because it's somebody outside of Rob's control who is seeing the way that he is with Henry, keeping tabs on him, etc., etc. But the way it plays out, unless she's gone to the family first and says she's going to do this, it looks like betrayal.
Yeah, you're right. She was a bit silly. She should have said something. But when she went round to Rob, she hadn't completely made up her mind, had she? But then he basically turned the whole thing on its head anyway, because she was about to go, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah, but she still could have gone round to Pat before and says, look, you know, Rob has asked me, would I look after Henry, do some babysitting, Pat? What do you reckon? I haven't quite made my mind up, blah, blah, blah.
And then I thought, do you think Rob will seduce her? Or is that just too stupid?
No, that's too much. That's too much.
I thought I'd throw it in. You never know.
Mm.
Quite interesting.
Now, the last thing that Jojo talked about was Shula.
Yeah.
Now,
She
can't be the bleeding heart Christian that she claims to be and not ultimately do the right thing.
Well, didn't she quite... So did Jojo meant that she was kind of being hypocritical by not... Yeah, but she wasn't being supportive enough. Oh, no, I think Witherspoon was saying that as well. Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, sorry, my name... Scrap that bit.
Can you just answer my point then?
I'll just
don't
go like
worry.
This.
Who I'm... actually said it? Answer it, please.
No, I'm just going to go like this. Mm.
Is that your considered response? Mm.
That means no. You carry on talking about it.
Well, I've asked you a question.
I can't remember what the question was.
Shula. Will she go to the Rozzers and say, actually, she lied?
Yeah, well, she definitely should, yeah. No, this is what Witherspoon was talking about as well, because she definitely should. But her worry now, after Alistair was so horrible, is that she's broken the law. But then we don't know if she's broken the law, do we? Because apparently...
No, she has lied. But the question for me is, would she get any kind of sentence for this? Surely not.
No, of course not, because presumably she'd go and say, I was really confused, I felt, you know, and also, wouldn't you just blame Rob for kind of, you know, making you confused and manipulating?
Well, he did bully her, didn't he?
Well, exactly, that's the thing, and you could go, it just, you know, because...
Or at least she felt that.
She did it for the right reasons, didn't she? She didn't
save the hunt. I don't know if that's the right reason in and of itself. She felt a certain amount of coercion. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Didn't she?
Yeah. And that must happen all the time.
Exactly.
They're not going to arrest her.
Yeah. The other thing is to say about this, and I can't remember where I saw this, whether it was on the forum or wherever. And just whilst I'm on the forum, if you want to have a bit of an insight into the legalese of all of this, Mid-Miss City is doing a blinding job on the forums, folks. She's there answering people's questions and taking things to pieces, etc. So, Miss Mid-City, bravo to you, madam. You're doing a sterling job.
Hi, it's Miss Mid-City, and I'm still sad and mourning the loss of Scruff. But it was all handled very sensitively. So he's gone off to the great doggy kennel in the sky. I'm also unhappy about Anna Tregoran, and I don't know what she's doing. Is she a barrister, or is she a barista who serves coffee? I don't know. Why she's pursuing character witnesses is a little bit baffling to me, because she still doesn't have an actual defence yet. There are only three witnesses to what happened that fateful evening with the stabbing. That's Helen, Rob, and Henry. There are no other witnesses that are going to be any use. As to her state of mind before or after, of course, you've got Kirsty, you've got Pat, the allegation that she threatened to kill Rob and all the rest of it. Fine. I don't really think Jess is going to add an awful lot to this. Jess is going to come along and say, oh, he was a horrible husband to me. Fine. That means he was a horrible husband to Helen. Fine. But Jess didn't stab him. Helen did. Helen's the one who needs a defence. It's going to have to be something a bit more than what she's coming up with so far. As for Shula will also come along at some point, perhaps, and say, oh, he was a horrible person. He hit a hunt saboteur. Fine. Doesn't explain why Helen stabbed him that evening. Helen's going to have to speak up for herself at some point. And the idea she could actually do it on the witness stand is nonsense. So this whole storyline is very misleading, dangerously so. It's not possible, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I'm aware, not possible to be presenting your defence in the witness stand. You need to give the prosecution a chance to investigate it. And you can't surprise them with the evidence on the day of the trial. This is stupid. As to Shula and Jess and the quality of any evidence they're going to give, I would have thought they're pretty easy to discredit. If Shula now comes forward and salves her conscience by saying, I lied to the police, she's not going to be an awful lot of use as a witness who has a self-confessed liar. And Jess coming along now and saying, I was this man's wife, he treated me appallingly, doesn't explain why she wanted him back and wanted him to be the father of the child that turned out not to be his child. And she may well be an embittered spouse or just a very confused woman. Too easy, I think, to discredit her. So I wouldn't be relying on her. Helen hasn't apparently got any kind of defence and doesn't seem capable of defending herself, insofar as she's providing her defence counsel with absolutely nothing to defend her. It's a stupid nonsense the way this is being portrayed. I've kind of had enough. I was really cross on Friday. I'm less cross now, but if I give it any thought, I will be really annoyed. Anyway.
But the one thing about the whole Shula thing is that, of course, you know, her turning around now and changing the story could well be that she's just trying to back up her cousin. Well, you know, It is a family member, so it doesn't smack as if she's some independent witness at all. Yeah. You know.
But the thing is, she would have gone to the police. Alistair was so horrible.
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
And if he is having an affair and hates her, I mean, he's hated her for ages, hasn't he? But
he's in good company there. You know, just about every listener in the Archers hates Shula too.
But he used to just tolerate her at least. He was never that nasty, was he?
Well,
he's so tame the rest of the time.
No, absolutely. The other thing to be said about the last week in the Archers was Alistair talking to Docky Lockie, talking about what goes on in people's marriages and you never really know.
Oh.
And well, obviously he was talking about his own.
Oh, I think I missed that. He
had this whole thing about saying that, because obviously talking about Rob and Helen, and you never really know what goes on, and he's obviously talking about his own.
God, you're so clever, Royfield. I didn't pick up on that.
You know, what I do is I listen.
The thing is, I just kind of occasionally, you know, if I'm cooking, then sometimes it's just noise in the background. You know, you can't be on it all the time.
You know what? All right, Harriet, I think you might have just... That's going to be on your epitaph for you being a dum-de-dum co-host. It's just noise in the background.
Really comforting noise. Like a lovely song you hear a lot and, you know, makes you feel good. It's just really comforting. But, God, well done. Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm. That's the thing. Poor script writers. You know, it is wasted, isn't it, on some of us.
Just before we go on to Witherspoon.
Yeah.
Have you got a dog?
No.
Ever had one?
Yeah.
When it passed.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel?
Well, I was a child, so I think I was very sad, but I didn't.
But you bounced back.
Quickly. You do date when you're a child. It was devastating, but I can't say that the feeling stuck with me. But I really, I thought that was so. It was so lovely the way they did it with Linda, and I was trying to remember today what the scene where he actually died, where she was with Fallon. What did she say? She said it was a really nice expression. She said something like he's ran his last road or something. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was something a bit kind of touching.
See, you didn't remember.
None of us can actually remember what was said.
Line,
but no, just coming back, because last week you came out with a whole load of predictions saying, oh, Fallon can't run things. It's got to be Linda and blah, blah, blah. And obviously that was just before we'd actually listened to that Sunday episode. And I absolutely loved that episode.
Yeah,
I loved every line, every comma, every full stop, you know, every paragraph break. I just thought it was great. And I love the fact that it was the two grandmothers at the start. It was Lillian and Linda.
Really
loved that.
And it was really believable, all of that.
It absolutely was. I love Fallon's kind of panic, but then her just going, there's only one person who can rescue this.
Yeah.
And then Linda swanning around like the celebrity that she is. And it was just great. It was absolutely lovely.
And actually, it's funny. You should read Christine's Ambridge Observer on it, because it's very funny. She talked, you know, she's kind of reporting about Linda swanning around in what she's dressed in. I can't remember what she said, but it's very funny. That's worth a read. It was really clever, that. Really good. But I did say he was going to be ill. So, you know, I got about...
Yeah, no, you said there'd be something and he wouldn't show. Right, now, Witherspoon.
Oh, no, what's his theme music again? I think I was like, blankety blank. No, it's not that. What is it?
No. Toss salads and scrambled eggs.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, but it's just more noise to you, though, isn't it?
Has JoJo Sexy Heels got theme music?
No.
Because she should do.
These boots were made for walking.
Oh, that would be... Yes!
That's what it should be.
Yeah, the trouble is you're going to end up having music for everyone, aren't you?
Exactly. And especially if people like you say, you know, everyone should have their own music. But anyway.
Yeah.
Witherspoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Harriet, Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, still dancing around the living room in the spirit of the Rio opening ceremonies. My sense is that Americans allow themselves to enjoy such spectacles more than Brits do. I also can't believe how quickly the last 4 years since the London Olympics have gone. The topic of time passing quickly leads us to the sad event that ushered in the past week in Ambridge, the peaceful but surprising death of Scruff. My condolences to Linda, and may I say to her, why couldn't it have been Rob? Rob was his usual despicable self in his manipulation of Emma, and that led to the infuriating conversation between Susan and Pat. First, Pat has such a difficult time handling stressful news and becomes easily overwhelmed. She could have just told Susan that she wanted to talk with Emma about the background of this, that she had previously gone to Rob and offered her help in babysitting Henry and was refused. I believe that Emma would have felt used by Rob and gone back and told him to shove his job where the sun doesn't shine. Well, she probably wouldn't have, but I would have encouraged her to do so. Then there's Susan. I continue not to be a fan of hers. First, she tells Emma not to tell anyone about the babysitting job, and then she spills the beans to Pat. Really not surprising, because she tries at any turn to one-up her employer. She so resents that she and Neil are dependent upon Pat and Tony for a good chunk of their income that she will do whatever she can to undermine the employer-employee dynamic. Because Pat is so easily flustered, Susan was able to change the discussion to one in which she was the one offended because Emma's loyalty to Helen was being questioned. In fact, I do question Emma's loyalty to Helen, and I also question the loyalty of Shula, Caroline, and Alistair to their relative and friend as well as their basic sense of ethics and fair play. That fair play comment is especially meant for cricketer Alistair. So Shula, as Spike Lee would say, do the right thing. I think she eventually will. As I think Jess will talk to Anna, I'm not sure why she's reluctant to do so, considering that she was willing to talk to Helen on the Friday before the fateful Sunday dinner. It all seems complicated and confusing. Back to the theme of time going quickly. The residents of Ambridge are beginning to remind us that September and the trial will soon be upon us. In reality, it's clear that Helen is still much too traumatized to stand trial. But Anna, do we still have faith in you as a trial lawyer? Tregoran won't ask for a delay, though she should. We, the listening audience, really don't want a delay, and I suspect that a lot will be going down in the next week. Till then, this is Witherspoon and Angus Haggis signing off.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Right, now, Witherspoon has been watching the Olympics and hating on Susan. Hating on Susan for disliking her employers. What do you reckon?
So, hang on, let me just look at my Witherspoon notes.
The thing to do, Harriet, is when you're reading your notes, not make it sound like you're reading notes.
I want to be honest. Otherwise, it sounds like I'm reading my notes, but I'm not being honest about
it. You're denuding this podcast of its magic.
Sorry. So my notes aren't helping me anyway, because I can't read them. But Susan's just, that's her way, isn't it? That's what she's like. Mm. Do you mean the fact, so the kind of, the being mean to Pat and Tony. Can you do this bit?
Well, Witherspoon's point was that Susan managed to not be sensitive to at all to, you know, Pat's feelings when she heard that Emma was babysitting for Rob, and then managed to spin it all the way around so, you know, that Susan was somewhat kind of offended. And his overwhelming kind of point is that Susan dislikes the fact that she actually has employers.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of came out, and then a kind of a snark. Now, I hear that. I hear that.
Yeah.
But the relationship between Pat and Susan isn't strictly speaking boss and employee.
No, exactly.
Because, you know, they are also friends and they live in a tiny village.
Yeah, and Susan does pat a favour by, I mean, I know she gets
by
paid.
By working for her. That's not a favour.
No, I know she gets paid, but I mean, you know, she's been a loyal, she's never really been a proper employee, has she? Well, she's kind of like, they help out, don't they?
No, they do. But I think the very fact that they work and live cheek by jowl, it's not going to be...
Their relationship isn't boss and employee.
No, strictly speaking, no.
They're friends.
They're friends as well. They are friends as well.
And so, I thought that Susan was right to stick up for her daughter. And I thought Pat was...
Yeah, me too.
Overreacting. And...
No. I don't think Pat was overreacting. I think Pat's reaction was totally understandable. Completely understandable. Whether it was right or whether it was wrong, you understood where it came from. But Susan was defending her daughter and actually did a decent job.
Yeah, I would have said.
Yeah.
I agree. But then, yes, and then, look, see, Witherspoon was also talking about Emma's loyalty to Helen.
Mm.
That's in my notes.
And we dealt with that before?
Yep.
Right, now, the return of Jess, yes.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. But then, actually, I thought, that background music was weird. So Jess had, like, classical music on really loudly in the background. But it was actually quite hard to tell whether she was at home or in a shopping mall.
Or maybe she was just at a classical music concert.
Yeah, in the middle of the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah, it was shouting. The proms.
What did you say? I'm on the phone!
Well, I think it's good that Jess is back because we know that we've... I'm not going to say we're at the end game of this.
What, though? It's also tiring, though. I find Anna interrogating Helen is, I find it tiring, you know, because Helen's going, no, I can't talk. And she's going, oh, please, no, please. And it'll be exactly the same with Jess now. It'll be like, oh, please, no, I can't say anything. Oh, all right, then. You know, it's just boring, don't you think?
Well, I'm tired. I'm tired of the whole thing.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You know, and
I do want a kind of long drawn out, or is she going to speak? Is she going to, you know, just come to the trial, say something, and then let's just resolve it quickly.
Well, no, she needs to say something before the trial so there can actually be a proper defence for Helen, because the way that I see it, there's absolutely no defence. There is no witnesses to Rob's, beastly behaviour. Oh. And Helen hasn't mounted any defence whatsoever. So we need, Jess needs to spill the beans way before so a defence can be mounted.
I don't know anything about
it. And then it needs to be corroborated with what Shula's going to say, etc. And even Ian, you know, because Ian and even Fallon have been witness to... Yeah, and Kirsty been witness to Rob's... Yeah, but Kirsty's batting for the other side, though, isn't she? Is a prosecution witness.
Yeah, what does that mean? Is.
In a oh dear.
And the legal stuff just goes. I just all I know is the bit where then they're in court.
Yeah. Right. Our judicial system is adversarial, so you know you argue against each other. Now the people defending Rob, right? Are you with me?
Yeah. Right?
Have got Kirsty as a witness.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so...
She accidentally ended up doing that, didn't she?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
She got herself in it. Yeah, it's all coming back to me.
Great.
Oh, it just goes a bit above my head, all that.
Mm. Second and last time you co-host.
Look, I can talk about the stuff that isn't important. The old stories, and I can do a few voices, but I can't. You know, I can't talk about the really important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, where are we?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I think it's time that we took a brief break, because you obviously need to lie down.
I think I do.
When you don't have a roof over your head.
Build that wall. Build that wall.
There was
build
nothing marked
wall.
Classified build on my
wall.
Emails,
build
either send
wall.
Or receive.
Build that wall.
I am humbled to have been chosen by the Conservative Party to become its leader.
He said Britain is just a small island that no one pays attention to.
A former colony won the right to determine its own destiny.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the ocean from the perspective of the other.
Do you have a National Trust sticker on your car? Do you think you could be best friends with Kath Kidson? Do you spend hours wandering around the airport looking for an organic quinoa cafe because you refuse to go to Burger King? Then Sarah Smith Cloths offer you. Available from Sainsbury's for the Posher Washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
I've just had a look at the Dumpty Dum shop. They've got no tracksuits, but they do t-shirts, which are very flattering. Nice if you want to show off your figure a little bit. Nick couldn't carry one off, of course, but I can.
Good day, everyone. What a fabulous episode last week. That podcast was fantastic. Congratulations to everyone involved. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Doing a quick roundup this week of our Facebook page. Not possible, because our Facebook page has been very, very busy. I didn't get a clear direction from people on the Boys Presenting Only podcast. What would you like discussed? There were far too many topics. I'm going to leave that up to the boys on the day. But I'm delighted to say that I do have someone who stepped forward to say they'll do the Facebook page roundup and the forum roundup. So you will hear a different voice on the next episode. We also discussed whether if Shula volunteers the information she has about the hunt, whether she was going to be charged and face prison for perverting the course of justice. I was quite surprised by that. I teach legal studies in Australia, and I wasn't convinced that that would be an issue here, but I'm not an expert in any way on English rules, so I asked. And I don't think we got anyone who absolutely knew the answer. Robin Winning said it's impossible to say, because we don't know what she signed at the police station, if it was signed under penalty of perjury or what. Clearly she needs to get some legal advice. Pauline Midwinter suggested that she'd probably just get a warning. How could that end up in prison? I think Alistair is having an affair, hence not being worried about how Rob treated her. I must admit that was the other thing that really surprised me, how Alistair didn't get cranky about the way she'd been treated. Helen Sanson said if she spoke about how he bullied her, won't it lend credence to Helen's case? Or will it look as you say, a family member is just trying to help? And there was a range of opinions on this, so please get on and have a look, and of course become involved, because we do want your opinion. So some photos were posted up showing where people listen to the podcast, and honest to goodness, they are absolutely fantastic. You've got to get on and just see all around the world where we're being listened to. Audrey Ann, Delgado Covarrubias is in California. Monique Veal in Zurich. I've got Vicky Van Gorkum in Los Angeles. Doug Font in on a boat, Boston to Maine. Jane Curzon in bed in Muswell Hill. Just all around the world. You just got to get on and have a look. They are fantastic photographs. And post up yours. We still more than happy to receive more. We also asked, does anyone want to predict what is happening with the water at Grange Farm? Alison Molyneux Johnson says, ancient burial of the Grundy gold has been untimely disturbed when the tree was cut down, and the evil tree spirits have returned, lured by the elves in Grundy's field. They now await the secret signal, a wet pony named Thrice in distress during a thunderstorm. That, well, the sewer is blocked. Catherine Kavanagh says, we all know what's happening. The storm is the pathetic fallacy here. Remember on Custard Gate night, there was a huge electric storm over much of the south of England. Yeoman Stephanie is going to be dumped in a culvert. Bye-bye, Rob. Oh, and bye-bye, Ian, and Adam's marriage too, plus bye-bye, Helen. Whether we like it or not, she gutted a man with a carving knife, so she will have to do time. Just talking about the pathetic fallacy, my 12-year-old was doing a book review recently, and she was talking to me about it, and I said, oh, that's a really good example of pathetic fallacy. And we discussed that, and she went to see her grade 6 teacher here in Australia, and he said, there is no pathetic fallacy anymore. Oh, okay. So surely that isn't something that just kind of we grow out of. Anyway, the other thing I was going to say about culverts is I now understand the importance of culverts, because we've had a lot of rain and we have been flooded recently, and it's actually been quite difficult here. And we were talking to the next door neighbours who are quite old but haven't lived there very long, and they were getting very distressed too. And another older neighbour turned up. Remember, we are in the middle of Wootwook. And we were talking about the flood, and we said, you know, the culvert is blocked, but we don't know where the culvert is. And he stood back, looked and said, yeah, well, you're going the wrong way. The culvert's actually up the other end, in the other direction. Sure enough, we dug it out, and I can tell you there's nobody has been drowned in it, no Stephens, but we now have a drained property. I'm so excited, and I've decided culverts are the best thing ever. Anyway, get involved. DumptyDum.com/forums or on the Facebook page. See you there. Hooroo!
Thank you, Millie Bell. That was most lovely and awesome.
And, as usual.
Yes, as usual. Yeah.
In my break, I should have gone and got a glass of wine, but I didn't, because you didn't give me much of a break. I know it's like just a pretend break, but I did actually get up to go and get a glass of wine, and then you were back.
I tell you what, Harriet, you really are out of control.
It's very hot over here today.
Is it?
It's very hot today, yeah. Yeah, it's been really nice.
What is the temperature?
Hot. You know, really sunny. Sunny late 20s. Yeah.
Lovely.
How's it over there?
Actually, it's... no, there's not a cloud in the sky, but it's actually not roasting hot. It's just nice. Just nice.
Right.
Right. Now, I think we should start to wrap things up.
Yes, I think you might be right. Have I got any more bits to say, though?
Well, if you look at the script in front of you, the bits that are in red.
Thing that I was thinking about.
Go on.
Oh, I know what. And can I just say as well, so it was Millie Bell that was talking about Shula and the legal advice. And yeah, that's what kind of gave me hope that Shula will be okay. Because we don't know what the legal situation is, do we? We don't know what she actually said to the police and what she said in her statement.
No, we basically do know that she backed Rob up by saying that he didn't strike the sab or whatever. So she basically, you know, we know that
she
Rob struck the sab, lost his rag, and she said that didn't happen.
Yes, you're right, actually. Thinking about it, remembering it, yeah, she actually is, she is risking, isn't she, going to the police.
Okay, you just let me know when I can start to wrap this show up, and I'll do that.
Oh, shall I? Can I just say my bit that I was today?
Okay.
So today, because this is like my bit now. So I was.
Go on.
Well, no, I was. This was the only bit I prepared. I didn't prepare it, but today I thought. So we were in the park and they were doing a Punch and Judy show.
Mm-hmm.
And what's quite amazing is Punch and Judy shows are 354 years old, according to the man that was doing it. But anyway, and it was obviously very, it was a very modern Punch and Judy show. So it was Judy doing the hitting and not Punch. But Punch did throw the baby down the stairs. But it made me think, oh, it's Rob. So he's like Mr. Punch, isn't he?
It's not just Rob, it sounds like Donald Trump too. He's kicking babies out of press conferences and whatever.
Oh,
did you not hear that this week? There's a baby who's crying, and he told the mother of the baby to leave.
Oh my God, I didn't know that. Didn't hear that.
Mm.
Wow.
So, and you're saying that Judy, in effect, was Helen.
Well, no, in the olden Punch and Judy shows, you know, it was Mr. Punch that was constantly knocking Judy about and being abusive. But from the outside, he's everyone's friend, isn't he? He's funny and people love him, and just made me think of
that. I'm surprised that in these enlightened times there even still is Punch and Judy shows.
Well, no, but the thing is, that's what was interesting. So the guy that was doing, because I vaguely remember like watching a Punch and Judy show when I was about five, and I remember not thinking it was very funny, but he had these kids and they were, you know, age 3 to 7, well, loads of different ages of kids. They were all completely enraptured. But before he did the show, he did say, let's remember this is theatre, and he made a big deal about that. And then it wasn't kind of Mr. Punch didn't ever hit Judy. So Judy did hit Mr. Punch a lot, and Punch did throw the baby down the stairs. But, you know, it doesn't really, but the fact he said, and actually I thought it was quite sad that he had to remind us that it's theatre, because it is theatre and it's just silliness, isn't it? People, puppets hitting each other. It doesn't mean anything.
Well,
I mean,
no, because it kind of shows you that, you know, the sensibilities of the time have moved on from where that original bit of drama was created. Yeah. And I saw a similar thing in To Catch a Thief. Now, To Catch a Thief is a film with Cary Grant, and I love Cary Grant. And I had a shop like some 20 plus years ago, a clothes shop, and I nearly named my shop Cary Grant. That's how much I love that man. And in To Catch a Thief,
I was shocked. It was in a shock. I was like, what? You had to name a shock? It was that bad. The trauma was that terrible. Anyway, a shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're hard to work with, you are. Anyway, To Catch a Thief is set in the south of France, and Cary Grant is this kind of gentleman thief who's accused of thieving, and he actually doesn't. But there's a scene in it. Right, and I watched this at the BFI a couple of years ago, and halfway through, he just slaps this woman.
Oh.
Yeah, God. And you could have heard a pin drop.
God.
And if you roll back to films of the, you know, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, men were forever slapping women. You know, she was being hysterical, and you'd slap her to bring her back round and whatever. And a level of casual violence towards women was totally acceptable. And you have this suave, handsome Cary Grant. And because this film was shot in 1955, every now and then something would happen and there'd be a little bit of a titter because it was just so ridiculous and whatever. Though it's an absolutely a classic film. But I tell you, no one was laughing when you just slapped her around the chops.
And you
had to remember, in effect, it's a period piece, and attitudes to women were different then.
Yeah,
they weren't right, but they were different.
Yeah, no, that is shocking, obviously. But Punch and Judy, and of course, the Punch and Judy thing is a thing of its time, obviously. But it is theatre. But no, I just thought it was, I thought it was interesting that the guy basically had to explain to the kids, that this is theatre and it's kind of pretend and not real. But, you know, I don't ever remember watching Punch and Judy. I mean, it's because it's so ridiculous. The puppets look ridiculous as well. You would never think it's a reflection of reality, you know, like that. Yeah.
But you know, it's, and it kind of goes, and I know we jokingly tried to put a reference here to Donald Trump.
He did look like Donald Trump, though, because red nose.
You know, so Donald Trump this week orders this woman with a crying baby out of this rally because he couldn't concentrate. One of the reasons why Donald Trump has been successful in getting the Republican nomination is because certain people are fed up with political correctness. They want politicians, people in the public eye, to say exactly what they think and not to be incumbent by language.
Yeah.
And the same thing goes for actions, in that some people would say Punch and Judy plays on centuries-old, eons-old attitudes to women, whereby a woman was a chattel of her husband and could be slapped about. Yes, yeah. They are puppets, but we have moved on as a society, as a culture, and we need to put that completely beside us. And you could construct an argument that says, well, yes, and that is the reason why then he needs to, the puppeteer needs to frame it as, this is theatre, this is also historic, and this because this is not the way that we we treat women now. I just think it's actually an interesting debate, in that there are many people that say, well, we are robust enough as a society that we can have this, and we all understand the context of it. But then some people say that then it just legitimizes misogyny. You know, so you can argue it every which way, but, and some people say, oh, it's just puppet, it's just a bit of nostalgia, just puppets and whatever.
Yeah.
But then you then argue that it's impressionable minds, and legitimizing violence. So
Well, that's the thing. It was very violent, even though they're just wooden puppets. And Judy sounded like a bloke because Punch had that kind of voice, and Judy was talking like that. So it was quite. if you're like five, I think you couldn't work out who was who anyway. But it was just basically puppets bashing each other, but the kids thought it was hilarious. And it was, you know, it was sweet. Maybe it shouldn't have been sweet. I was going, oh, as these like kids were tittering over these characters beating each other up. But no, he was great, actually.
Sorry,
quickly. So I went on the Dumpty Dum website on Facebook. And those pictures are brilliant, where people are sending in where they're listening it to it.
Are you trying to just knacker my little notes here deliberately?
Oh, were you going to do that?
Of course I was.
Oh, sorry, Roy. Oh, sorry. Oh, we should just edit out.
Listen, we're gonna do this, right? And it's going to go a bit like this. Right, dumdydum.com, please go there. We've got a shop. You can buy some stuff, which has got the dumdydum.com logo on it. Please go there. It's awesome. It's also got a forum where people talk about stuff. And we talked about Mid-Miss City, who has just been playing a total blinder on that forum. So go on to dumdydum.com for the shop, the forum, and other great dumdydum things. Now, iTunes, please write us a review. It's really important. You don't need to have an iPhone, an iPod, or anything that has an I in front of it to write a review. Just have the internet. You've got the internet. It's true. Go onto the internet. Go onto iTunes. Sign up. Write a review. Awesome. 5 stars. Thank you very much, please. Now, another way you can help us is by keeping our little show on the road. Now, there are specifically 2 ways this can be done. You can donate by hitting the donate button on our site.
Or you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com, search for Dumpty Dum, and you can donate $2 a show, which is about £1.30.
Cool. Now, Remember to get in contact. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our site or call us on 0203 031 3105 to leave us a telephonic message. On social media, you can find us, specifically Twitter, where we're at DumDumMe. I'm at Royfield.
Sarah Smith is at Sarah_Smith. Lucy is Lucy V. Freeman. And Harriet is at Chambridges.
On the Book of Face, you'll find us by typing in DumDum, and we have some 1,300-odd like-a-lurkers.
Can I just ask everyone to like Chambridge as well on Facebook?
Oh, I didn't even know that you had a Chambridge page.
I know, because I keep forgetting about it.
But you've got one now.
Yeah, thanks. If people like it, then I might remember about it.
All right, cool. I'm going to do that.
It's
now.
Chambridges. No, do you think it's just called Chambridge, actually? Carry on.
Now, last week, Exeter Dormouse started something which was most brilliant. And he took a picture of himself on the Conway estuary with his little pooch, and it just looked all kind of bleak. And I said, oh, that was just great. Please do that. You've been doing that in your droves on the Book of Face and on the Twitters. And some of the pictures are truly, truly stunning.
Lovely.
We've had people all over the globe who've been sending in pictures of where and how they listen to Dumpty Dum. So we've had America, we've had Rhode Island, we've had California, we've had places in Dorset, we've had Portugal, yes, the Algarve, we had Cyprus, we've had New Zealand, we've had Perth, Australia, we've had somebody about to run over a pedestrian in the middle of London.
It's absolutely
stunning. So the hashtag, if you're going to put this on Twitter, is where I listen to Dumpty Dum. Oh, we've had a few bedrooms as well. So
it's Andrew Horn's swimming pool.
Yes, well, I don't think it's actually his swimming pool. It's basically stopping in Cyprus. We've had quite a few dogs on leads as well.
Yeah.
Haven't we? Joanne Jackson, who's walking her dog. So please continue to send those in, because those are absolutely lovely.
Have you sent one in?
No. Have you?
No. But you should. Because you're in an interesting place. I'm not in a very interesting place at the moment. But you are in a, you know, lovely place by the beach.
I'm not by the beach.
Aren't you?
I'm in the Bay Area, but I'm not by the beach.
Oh.
Mm. But maybe I will. Maybe I will.
Yeah. I will too.
Mm. Right, so continue to send those in, because those are lovely, lovely, lovely. And I will put them, if you put them on Facebook, I'll tweet them out as well. Oh, and also I love Leslie G, who's Special Diet One, who was on the ferry between Westray and Kirkwall on the way to Orkney. And there's a nice picture of just the side of her head as a camera just looks out onto this bleak ocean. Yeah. But there are some lovely, lovely, lovely shots. So, yes. Oh, and special props go out to Glyn Fuller Love, who's on the 52 bus on the way to Royal Albert Hall. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep sending them in. They're lovely.
Cheers.
All right.
Good.
Right then.
Thanks.
Next week is Man's Hour.
Oh, can't wait.
Yeah, it's good.
I mean, I'll be listening. Have you sorted it out?
Nope. But I've got 7 days to do that. So it's going to be me and Andrew Horn and Yokel Bear, who will be presenting. And then... Stephen Fry will not be part of it. Or Adrian Childs, as you kept on banging on about last week.
Yeah, I assume he got in touch.
Yeah.
His agent did.
Yeah.
Good.
Right then.
Oh, thanks. It's been really nice.
I'm glad one of us enjoyed it.
Royfield. Sorry, I wasn't really on the ball, was I? No, I thought I was going to be really on the ball this week.
But yeah, I realised, I know this is your MO now, you know, studied, organised chaos. You know,
I can't do production. I mean, you know, I can you know, I can do something if I've got a script. I'll do the whole script. Fine. But I can't really, I just can't really remember things. Like, you know, like what happened like in the Archers.
How to pause and let other people talk.
I need a whole script with everything on it. And then things like, you know, stage directions, basically. but no, it's been really nice.
It's been really lovely having you.
Thanks for having me. I have enjoyed it, honestly. It's been really good.
Well, we're going to have you on again soon, because by the looks of things on Twitter, people did enjoy you being on the show.
I really liked that they thought I sounded like Kate. Oh, that is brilliant. I think she sounds great. And I didn't do any impressions.
But I'll just end with a quick one.
Okay, what should I say? And who do you want? Do you want Kirsty?
Oh yeah, give us Kirsty.
She's quite easy to do. Hang on, Tom Sausages. No, Tom, what are you doing, Helen? Hang on. You haven't heard from me for a while because I've been back up. Oh, hang on, I have to think. It's really hard. Improvise as Kirsty and think of something to say. Sausages, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show, Royf. I've been wanting to come on for a long while, but I've been busy trying to get Helen off. And the reason you haven't heard me on the show, on the Archers much, is because I've been banging on the walls at that penitentiary that Helen's at and trying to get her to stop being friends with that Kaz, because she means nothing. She's just trying to manipulate Helen in the way that Rob sent her in there. It's all part of his plan. So, anyway, that's where I've been. Anyway, see you soon on the Archers, I'm sure, back in Ambridge. Ciao for now.
Penitentiary?
Is that what you say?
Where the hell is this thing set?
She's in a penitentiary. That's where she is.
She's in a mother and baby unit in Clink, in a bloody prison penitentiary, the wrong side of the Atlantic. But anyway.
In my head, she's in a kind of, you know, in a horrible...
Yeah, but my point is, we don't refer to those institutions this side of the Atlantic as penitentiary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tentris.
Wasn't me, it was Kirsty.
Whatevers. All right, love. Love you lots.
Good to see you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a good week.
We'll do. Bye bye.